It's Lars Larson. Thanks for listening to my podcast and for listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show, and happy Monday from the Radio Northwest Network. I've got a shocker for you. The unemployment payments have run out for tens of thousands of people here in the Pacific Northwest, and you know what? What a surprise. It's a total shock to me that all of a sudden employers are starting to have people show up on their doorsteps with filled out applications. They're actually looking for work. I know it's such a surprise to those of us who saw all those unemployment payments going out for all that time. And we wondered, you know, what would happen if you just said, hey, no more freebies. Go out and get a job. There are more than 10 million available jobs in America as I'm standing here right now. And all of a sudden, the minute the money disappears for extended unemployment benefits and extra payments every week, all of a sudden employers, and I know they're not surprised at all, are having people show up and say, hey, I'm looking for a job. But it leads us to another question. And I wanted to make this today's Twitter poll, and I know it's probably going to make some of you angry. But that's okay. What we supply to the Pacific Northwest and have for more than 21 years is honestly provocative talk. If I don't get you thinking about the issues of the day here in this region, then I'm not doing my job. And if you'd like to join in the conversation, I'm glad to have you at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. So here's the question that we have put up on the Twitter poll. You can also find it at our website and vote there as well. But only vote one time. I mean, don't take a tip from the Democrats. They're already starting to cheat in California's recall election, and I'll have the details on that a little bit later. But today's question, should employers fear hiring workers who took the 18-month break from gainful employment? Should they? If you're an employer and you have two people show up at the workplace and each one says, I would like a job, and if you have only one job opening, are you going to hire the person who said, no, 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 I managed to find a job even during COVID, even during the last 18 months, and the other person says, nah, I haven't worked at all in the last 18 months. I've been on extended unemployment and stimulus payments and all that. Which one will you choose, and will it make a difference to you? Should employers fear hiring a worker who took the 18-month break from work? I would answer yes, and I'm being honest. That is the way I would look at it. I would say, back in January of this year, so we're talking almost 10 months ago, there were 7 million open jobs in America. There were tens of thousands of open jobs in Oregon and Washington and Idaho. In fact, as I'm standing here right now, the most recent numbers I got from the Employment Division say that there are about 121,000 employees who are looking for a job, theoretically. They're on unemployment, and there are about 98,000 open jobs in the state of Oregon. Similar numbers for Washington State. And when you say, but don't the rules say that if you turn down a job that you're offered and you're on unemployment, then you get kicked off? Now, strangely enough, I'm being a little sarcastic, but back about a month ago, I began asking the Employment Division, so when the rules changed back to if you turn down a job, you're no longer on benefits, have you actually kicked anybody off the benefits? And I suspected the number would be low. You know, it took them a few weeks to actually pull that number together. It should be a number that they're mentioning every single time they do one of these news briefings for the reporters. They finally got back to me. Now, remember, 121,000 people unemployed, tens of thousands of jobs available, and it seems nobody is being offered a job. I know if you're an employer, you're laughing or maybe screaming at the radio at this point. The State Employment Division for the state of Oregon, in this case, I still don't have the numbers from Washington State, but in Oregon, they said, yes, since May of this year, out of 121,000 people on extended unemployment benefits, we have removed 104 people from the rolls of unemployment, you know, cut off their benefits because they turned down a job that was offered to them. 104 people out of 121,000. Now, do you suspect that if somebody, a man or woman, or a pronoun, if you will, was out there actually looking for a job, that they were probably offered multiple jobs from multiple different people? I've talked to employers who said, oh, yeah, I hired four people the other day. One of them showed up. The other three didn't show up at all. And the one who showed up stayed for 2 days and then immediately left. So if you're an employer, should you be fearful about hiring somebody who said, nah, I'm going to take 18 months off from work. And when the money finally runs out and they stop sending the checks, then and only then am I going to look for a job. Today's Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, let me tell you what brought this to mind today. There's a story done by the ABC affiliate in Portland. That's KATU. Its sister station in Seattle is Como, which is affiliated with the radio station we're on up there, which is KVI, because we're all over the Northwest. We've got the only region-wide radio network in existence in the Pacific Northwest. Here's the quote that jumped out and grabbed me by the throat. It's from an employer who said, my fear is that folks who took an 18-month break, now that they're forced to go back into the labor market and it sucks, that they just want to get paid, and I fear they're not going to want to do the actual physical job. When I read that, I thought, I know exactly what that person's talking about. As K2 pointed out, it's been 1 week since federal pandemic unemployment benefits ended. In the days that followed, restaurants across Portland tell K2 News they saw a spike in people looking for work. This is exactly what we've been suggesting for months now. We've been saying even before the pandemic, there were times where there was extended unemployment. And then occasionally a conservative state like South Carolina would say, you know what? We're not doing the extended unemployment thing anymore. There are plenty of jobs out there. Cut the benefits off. And the minute they cut the benefits off, people start looking for work. The owner at Chef's Table says his team is seeing 50% more applicants, but it comes at a time when there are still many, many more jobs to fill. They said there's a welcome influx, but I think people are coming back in and applying. They're going to find out, or they already know, that there are massive job openings, and we need this level of applications for a couple of months to be able to fill all of them. Nate Tilden says in the last 9 months, this is a restaurant owner, maybe two people have walked in the door to drop off a resume. In the past week, he's seen a dozen people walk in. So 9 months, two people walk in to ask for a job. The last week, a dozen people are looking for a job, according to K2 News. And Tilden, one of the potential employers, says he's seeing people with 18-month gaps in their resumes. And he says he's worried. He says, they just want to get paid. I fear they're not going to want to do the job of actually working. So answer the Twitter poll. If you want to join the conversation, it's 866-HEY-LARS. And naysayers go to the head of the line. Coming up, have Northwest leaders created dangerous cities by refusing to police and prosecute? And should volleyball players have to wear masks as they volley, block, and spike? We'll get to that in the nonsense coming up next.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
To be honest, I don't like lawsuits. Having said that, sometimes it is the best and only way to get something actually done about a problem. Erin Danielson, a supporter of Make America Great Again, lived in downtown Portland. Walking down the street the night of August 29th last year, a self-proclaimed Antifa activist, really a terrorist, ran up to Danielson and simply shot him to death for no particular reason. Law enforcement caught up with the killer, Michael Reinel, in Washington State and shot him to death when he tried to pull a gun. Now, Danielson's family has sued the city of Portland, its mayor, and district attorney for, quote, encouraging a culture of vigilante policing. You see, Mayor Feckless Ted Wheeler ordered the police to take a hands-off approach to Antifa. Self-styled social justice warrior D.A. Mike Schmidt publicly announced he would not prosecute hundreds and hundreds of crimes committed by the rioters. Reinel pulled the trigger that night that killed Erin Danielson, but Wheeler and Schmidt created the lawless environment that fostered Portland's now record-high homicide rate. The city owes Danielson's family big time. And when voters have finally paid enough, whether it's in blood or money, maybe they'll actually make some difference. Cerise, who signs herself on Getter, the stabby metal cupcake, says, me to my 11-year-old, did you talk about 9/11 in school yesterday? Her, no. Me, you know, the Twin Towers collapsing, killing all those people? Her, no. Me, sit down, let's talk. If schools aren't teaching about things like 9/11 or World War II, future generations will repeat the past. And I agree with that, absolutely. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe you're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. Doing the right thing matters.
Well, on this Daily Grill, I want to assign this to whoever you want to say is responsible for this. We've talked about a number of parties. If you want a picture of violence out of control in one Northwest city, Portland, the city of riots, used to be the city of roses, where a shooting incident over the weekend, one of more than 870 so far this year, woke up folks on Sunday morning. The Portland Police Bureau released a crime scene pic. I've posted it at both Twitter and Getter. In case you've never seen CSI, in the picture, you see more than 100 of those little yellow plastic flags that marks each one a shell casing found at the scene. Over 100 shots fired. Fortunately, nobody was hurt, just a lot of people scared. You can direct your comments on this to Mayor Feckless Ted Wheeler and DA Mike Schmidt, the social justice warrior who refused to prosecute crimes and refused to let the police do their job. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk at LarsLarson.com, comes in from Dr. Bruce, who's a family practice physician. Lars, I mentioned last week monoclonal antibodies, and I question why the Northwest states that say their hospitals are being overrun are not making greater use of this antiviral to fight the cases where people show up sick and you don't want them to end up going to the hospital. He said, Lars, I'm a physician. There is not enough supply of monoclonals for everybody just yet. One dose is about $2,000 paid for by the taxpayers. Now, I wrote back to Dr. Bruce and I said, well, number one, Florida treated 40,000 people this way. That's number one. So it wouldn't take that much if you're concerned about hospitals being overrun by lots of people sick with COVID and you're worried they're going to fill up the ICU. At $2,000, I haven't checked the prices recently, thank goodness. I don't know what $2,000 buys you at a hospital. I suspect that it buys you barely a day in a regular hospital room. It buys you a few hours in the ICU. But he goes on to write saying, because of the limited supply, they're being targeted for people over 65, others with health risks. I've talked to other doctors who tell me that this is actually not an expensive treatment, at least in relative terms, and that there is plenty of supply right now. If the Northwest states are truly concerned about hospitals being overrun, perhaps they should do what Florida did, and that was set up hundreds of locations where people already sick can go and get the monoclonal antibodies treatment. Now, there's another aspect to this. In Washington state, they've now imposed this new mask mandate if you happen to be at an event with more than 500 people. In Oregon, the mask mandates are inside, outside, upside down, and Charisse Edmonds wrote in to me. Charisse, welcome to the program. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me.
Now, you're the mother of a young lady who's a varsity volleyball player at Gresham High School, right?
Correct.
Okay. And they're making the volleyball players wear masks while they're playing the game?
As of Friday, they are. Prior to that, they were following the Oregon Department of Education's recommendations and guidelines stating that indoor sports, actually all sports, players were not having to wear masks at all while they were playing. They were still requiring them to wear masks while on the bench, but during actively practicing and playing in games, they were not being required to wear them. However, on Friday, all those rules changed.
Now, does that make any sense to you as this young lady's mom? And you can mention her
Absolutely.
Name if you like. I would have loved to have talked to her, but you're describing
She's
the situation just fine.
She's here with us, actually, if you want to speak with her. Her name is Ava, and she is very adamant against wearing masks. She has a very hard time wearing masks while she plays. But no, this rule doesn't make any sense to me and a lot of parents out there.
All right. Can I speak to Ava for a moment?
Absolutely. Here she is. Hi.
Ava, thank you for joining us. I just want my audience to hear from you. What in the world do your teammates say about being told you've got to wear a mask over your face while you're playing volleyball, which is a very physical sport?
Well, honestly, a lot of them like disagree with the mask, and some of them don't. Some of them think it's very, very needed. And personally, I think it's really stupid to wear them, specifically when I have some issues with breathing in general.
So you've already, and you know, in the last few months, Ava, I've spoken to some moms. One mom had her daughter collapse during a high school basketball game that she was playing in, and she was forced to wear a mask at that time. And she said, you can't do this to kids. What message would you give to Governor Kate Brown and to the Oregon Health Authority about the imposition of this rule?
Well, I would say, honestly, that I think she needs to lift every single mask mandate, including sports, schools, and every possible place that you have to wear a mask. I personally think it's stupid, and it doesn't help in any way against this virus. To me, it's like very harmful to the human body. It causes more harm than good, if anything.
Ava, thank you very much. And please tell your mom thanks as well. I appreciate you coming on the show because this is one way we draw attention to this kind of nonsense. That's Ava Edmonds, who's a volleyball player. I'd love to hear the naysayer who says, no, make all the kids mask up. And I'd remind you, that young lady who played basketball who collapsed during a game, her mom actually thought that she had died. Her heart stopped for a moment. Another young lady who collapsed while running in a track meet, that makes no sense. If anybody thinks it does, please call me up and explain why. Coming up in a moment, a Northwest family still trying to get family members out of Afghanistan on the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. I want to get to your phone calls and emails in just a moment, but I think this is a hugely important story. And the White House, I think, would like to put Afghanistan and Kabul and its disastrous pullout from that country in the rearview mirror. And let me say to you, I know that some of you say, well, we agree with Joe. There was no way to do it without chaos. I believe there were many ways to do it without chaos. The Trump plan had been, and there was a Trump plan, for those of you who keep insisting there was not, it was sit down with the Taliban, which he did, lay out what you're going to do, and say, if you break from the deal is off. Now, the United States, for the last 18 months before the disastrous pullout from Kabul a couple of weeks ago, had seen no U.S. casualties. In other words, we had a stable situation. And then Joe Biden deliberately destabilized it. And just about a month ago, about the 16th of August, the President of the United States said, I will not leave Afghanistan. We will not pull all of our troops out until every single American is out of there. And then Joe Biden even extended that to say, and all the other people who have a right to leave. Well, I thought we'd talk about that with Lena, who's an Afghan refugee whose family is trapped in Kabul. Lena, welcome to the program.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
I'm glad to do it. I got this email, and you said you have family there. Would you mind describing their situation right now and what they're doing to try to get out and why they weren't able to get out by the time America finally departed?
Yeah, sure. So as you know, that the Taliban, it has been almost 1 month or maybe so that the Taliban took over all Afghanistan, especially my families are back home, both in Kabul and also in northern provinces. So there are lots of struggles and lots of chaos going on. And especially now that for women who were working with this national and also international organizations, it has been a really big challenge that they could not get out from Afghanistan, and now they are stuck. Even some of them, like let's say my sister, she left her houses, her all belongings behind, and she had to move to some other place to Kabul, actually, to just like find a way to get out of Afghanistan, because it is really, really hard living in there, especially when you are being threatened by this, or also especially if you're a direct target, you know. But she, like, let's see, she couldn't get out of Afghanistan now, so she is in there, stuck with her kids, with her husband, who is a minority religious group member, and also some other fair, like the other people who are living in Afghanistan. They were all like working, they were studying, they were civil activists, and their lives are in danger because they were trying to expose or say the truth, you know, and now they're not able to do that. And if anybody would raise their voices, so directly or indirectly, they will be in a big trouble by Taliban.
Lena, your sister had I know a lot of people have said, well, why were these people there? Your sister had a very specific purpose for being there. Would you mind telling us what it was?
Being in Afghanistan?
Or? Yes, yes. And that she was working with an NGO, as I understand it?
So my sister is an Afghan, and here she is living in Afghanistan. She's an Afghan citizen. So she was working with this humanitarian aid offices to just like help the poor and most vulnerable people in Afghanistan who are in need of food, who are in need of any sort of humanitarian assistance. So now working as a humanitarian aid or employee, so she and her family like entirely are in danger of like the Taliban take over there. So she's actually living in Afghanistan, and she was living in Afghanistan before.
But she's a target. Is she a target in particular because of the kind of work she was doing?
Yeah, there are several things that I can say that, but yeah, so there are several reasons that she is a big target, and I was unfortunately not able to do anything for her to take her out, or especially for her four kids who are really innocent kids. The youngest is 4 years old, and like they were never been in this sort of situation. Especially, you can't imagine how hard it is that for a 10 or 13 years old kid to see a real life humanitarian violence in front of your eyes, like beating up a young man or woman, and their faces would be all with blood, and they were shouting for help, and this little kid are like facing that situation while crossing the street with his mom. So the mental health for him and also for other kids and all the people, like, can you imagine how hard it is? So they're all like in fear and unfair and just stuck in a place where they cannot even talk freely or like just visit their families or their relatives. They're just stuck in one place and they are looking for a way to just get out from Afghanistan to save their lives, you know.
Lena, has she been able to communicate with you in the last week or 10 days?
We are in communication, yes.
Can you say how they're doing? I mean, they're hiding right now. Is that their circumstance?
Yes, they are.
You don't want to say too much about that.
Yeah. So you know how things are going. So.
Yeah. But she has a good argument that if she stays there, the Taliban will target her and may either hurt her or her husband, who's part of an ethnic minority, or even kill them. That's what you fear?
Yes. That is exactly, yes. And that's not only an imagination or a prediction, but that is that's something that would happen if they find.
How long ago did you? Like, sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Lena, how long ago did you leave Afghanistan?
I have been in the United States almost 5-ish, I would say, 4 years and 9 months now.
You emigrated.
4 years and yeah, I'm an immigrant. Yeah.
Okay, but you came legally. Your sister would have a good reason for telling the United States government, "I deserve refugee status in the United States," and yet she was left behind. What would you say to the people who made the decision at the White House and at the State Department to simply leave people like your sister behind?
Well, I would just say that it was a really tough decision. And it's really hard to say and hard to expect things, you know. But in general, I would just say that the people of Afghanistan are really grateful that what the worldwide countries are doing for their needs. But in this tough situation, they are actually seems that they are left behind, you know, with no assistance. Like there are lots of families who are working with the U.S. government directly and who are or indirectly. But even like green card holder, the citizen, that they are behind, like they left behind, and they don't know what to do. All the borders are closed, all the flights are canceled, and they are not allowed to go to the airport. And now that their identity would be maybe known if they go to the airport and come back home, so maybe they will be followed by somebody. So that's why. So I would say it was not a really.
It's a dangerous situation. Lena, I appreciate you telling the story of your sister left behind in Afghanistan. We'll be back in a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network, where we endeavor to serve the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk. I might mention that President Biden is stopping off in Boise, Idaho. I think he's using this as a way to have the taxpayers pay most of the cost of flying out to California to support Gavin Newsom. But having said that, in theory, he's going to stop by Idaho because he wants to have a few words to say about reducing the danger of fire in Northwest forests. I don't think he's actually going to do anything that's going to change the picture. I think we all know how that's going to have to happen. Our Twitter poll today, should employers fear hiring workers who took an 18-month break from work? You know, I'm getting so many emails about this, like the young lady who wrote to me. I think I'll leave her name off of it because I get concerned sometimes that somebody's going to get blowback because of this kind of thing. But she wrote to me and she said, just listening to your show, we posted an ad for a front desk receptionist on Wednesday last week. Well within the period where unemployment benefits have already been cut off. She says, we pay well above minimum wage. As of this morning, we had over 100 applications. Barely 2% had had any job in the past 2 years. Nearly 80% have not had a job in more than 6 months at any time. It is a sad time. And I'd have to agree with that as well. Let's go to Allison calling in from Friday Harbor, listening on the Radio Northwest Network. Allison, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Lars. I'm up in Friday Harbor. I called last year during sports when my son was forced to wear a mask playing basketball. You and I talked about it. It was sort of just a quick conversation, but he'll be forced again to play in a mask. He didn't play last year because I wouldn't let him. And if it continues to go that way, I won't let him play again this year. But you've said multiple times that you're in support of masks. And so now,
as a choice,
as a choice. Right, right.
Not as a mandate. Okay. And it's all the difference right in the world, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. None of this should be mandated. It's all absurdity. And you and I usually agree on most things, but the mask thing, I think it's a slippery slope when we start talking about it, especially for kids in school. And I'm starting protests up in Friday Harbor about unmasking our kids in school because there's no evidence. There's no evidence that proves that masks work. Okay, maybe we could all say, like you've said before, well, it might help, so just do it. But again, that becomes a slippery slope, and then we become where we're mandating for kids to go to school in masks and playing basketball, of all things, and volleyball, like that mom. And it just becomes a situation where we start to support it a little bit, and then we all of a sudden our rights are just gone.
I agree. I agree, because yeah. Allison, what we're being told, literally, I had this this tweet that was sent out by, of course, the next president of the United States, unfortunately, is what she's likely to be, is Kamala Harris, currently the vice president. But you see how fast Biden is failing. She says, I'm gonna read this quote directly. By vaccinating the unvaccinated, a mandate, increasing our testing and masking, and protecting the vaccinated, we can end this pandemic. This is what the vice president sent out today on Twitter. And Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio said, if the vaccine actually protects the vaccinated, why do we need to protect the vaccinated? And it's a reasonable question that a lot of us are asking. Again, everybody wants the vaccine.
But we don't get any answers. We don't get any answers, and we have to send our kids to school in a draconian setting where this is uncalled for, and I don't know how to stop it. And again, I'm going to continue to protest in Friday Harbor and make sure that people know that this is not acceptable any longer. But the mask doesn't work, period.
I hope, Allison, that it inspires a lot of people like you to do something I've been suggesting for almost 25 years, run for the school board. And I did that long before COVID came along, which raises a bunch of other issues, or critical race theory, which raises a bunch of issues, and all the other woke nonsense that's being shoved down kids' throats, and say, run
our
for the school board.
Board is telling
and
us, so
are they backing you up?
No, not – well, what they're saying is they're passing the buck. Because we have Frank James, who is our health director in this community, and he oversees Island, Whatcom, Skagit, and he's up in Whatcom County overseeing us. They keep passing the buck between the both of them. Our school board would say, no, it's Frank James. He's put this down on us. And then Frank James says, well, the school board could stop it at any moment. And the school board says, but Frank James can implement it tomorrow morning. So as a parent, you're going, well, who's really in charge of this? Are you standing in between us and Olympia? And I don't know that our school board is actually physically doing that, but they keep passing the buck between our health director, and our health director passes it back to our school board. So we're stuck.
I know you are. And Allison, I'll go back to what I was saying back in March of last year when people said, well, how are we going to solve this? I said, the best decisions will be made by individuals and private organizations. In other words, if there's some restaurant and the restaurant owner says, I want everybody masked up, customers and staff, he can do that. She can do that. If you're a private individual and you say, I'm more comfortable wearing a mask, sitting alone in my automobile, driving down the highway with nobody else in the car, if it makes you feel good, put the thing on. But should the government be allowed to do this? And the answer is no. The government, Allison, I know people say, but you hate government. I understand government's a tool. I have lots of tools here at my home. You know, I can use a skill saw, but it's not good for everything. You know, and just because I own a hammer doesn't mean that everything's a nail. So who's going to make the best decision about where the hammer blow falls? The individual will. Government will always be worse at doing it. And Allison, thanks for the call from Friday Harbor. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to a Monday on the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to talk about the issues that really affect Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Still waiting to get word from Boise, where I guess President Biden is stopping by, and it sounds like there are plenty of people there ready to engage in that new chant you've been hearing a lot involving President Biden. Yeah, I think it's something along the lines of F Joe Biden, although I can't actually do justice to it on radio, or I'd end up with a big pile of fines. But in any case, welcome to the program. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. And of course, naysayers go to the head of the line. Well, as you know, Oregon and Washington have stood out as, I think, bad examples of how not to handle a pandemic or disease or masks or vaccines or anything else. And yet the governors of the two states have claimed amazing authority to be able to essentially order citizens to do anything that they choose to without involving the people's representatives in the legislature and certainly without changing the law. So I was glad to see that there's a brand new nonprofit in Washington state called the Silent Majority Foundation, and its general counsel and its founder is a lawyer by the name of Pete Serrano. Pete, welcome to the program.
Lars, thanks for having me on. Always love listening to you. Appreciate your take and happy to talk.
Thank you for that. let's start with the basics. Does Jay Inslee, and I guess by extension, you're concerning yourself with Washington State, but do Jay Inslee and Kate Brown as governors have the authority to issue things like blanket vaccine mandates?
No, I don't believe so. And in our lawsuit that we filed in Franklin County, which is home of the seat is Pasco, which was filed on Friday, we actually challenge that authority. We state simply that this is a violation of the United States and Washington State Constitution under religious freedoms, as well as the Equal Protections Clause. We also make the statement that this is a violation of separation of powers, that in fact the legislature has delegated certain authorities to health boards, both local and statewide, but not to the governor. And any authority that has been delegated to the governor, to Governor Inslee, under this Emergency Powers Clause, is not as far-reaching, as you said, as Governor Inslee would like to believe it is. So he violates even that. You know, and our third substantive cause of action is that these types of mandates violate a fundamental right in one's own body and the right to informed consent, which are longstanding doctrines that go back a century.
So do you have the chance, you're the lawyer, not me, but can you get a judge to actually slap down a temporary restraining order on Jay Inslee and say, Governor, you can't do this?
Yeah, you know, we're seeking what's called injunctive relief. It's very similar to a temporary restraining order, but it's a slightly different showing. Ultimately, it has to show that there's an actual dispute amongst the parties. No question, our plaintiff does not want the vaccine, and Governor Inslee is mandating such a vaccine. The second question is whether or not there's actual harm or potential harm to the individual. And unquestionably, I'm sure you've gone through the VAERS data and other information that's widely available, yep, demonstrating that this vaccine does have some nasty side effects, including death. And then the third question is ultimately whether or not the court can kind of make that decision to help the aggrieved party. So ultimately we're saying, court, you know, there is a legitimate dispute. My client, our client, is in harm's way because you're telling him he has to put something in his body to maintain employment, and we don't know what the side effects are. And court, you have the jurisdiction to make that decision.
You know, I was just sharing with my audience that the vice president, you know, Harris, both Harris and Biden last fall, as recently as less than a year ago, were bad-mouthing the vaccine, saying there was no way they were going to take it, that it was a foolish thing to do, that it wasn't to be trusted, et cetera. And now they've gone to the other direction, except Harris went further today. She actually said, you know, that her goal, their mandate, was to protect the vaccinated. And other members of Congress have said, hold on. Does the vaccine actually protect you? If so, why do you need protection once you've been vaccinated? It's some of the logical disconnect in there. Are you going to be able to get any of that in front of a judge and say, Your Honor, they've admitted that even once you're vaccinated, you may need to be protected against other vaccinated people and unvaccinated people. What's the sense of making people do something when it provides so little protection that even after vaccination, you still have to be protected in some way?
Yeah, I really appreciate that question. I don't know that we'll actually get Kamala or Vice President Harris's statement on record, but as you see, the CDC and FDA are out coming out with the same types of statements. So, you know, we'll look to proclaimed scientists and what they have to say. And based on what you're, you know, similar vein of thought here is you have these regulators, these scientists, these doctors who are saying this is not what we intend it to be. This is not, you know, effective, like we've said. And then again, you go back to the VAERS data, show the number of deaths that are statistically significant. Yeah, you know, ultimately, we're hoping that we can get the ruling here in the next few weeks to stop the mandate. And then as the governor's team pushes back, we anticipate a heavy evidence-based battle here.
So you're going to have... You're going to actually have the Attorney General of Washington State, who's going to be, speaking on behalf of the governor's action, but with no backing from the legislature, from the people's representatives, defending what the governor is doing?
Yeah, that's how this plays out. You're correct.
Okay, and one other concern, but I don't know if there's a way to get at it through court. It's right that you defend these individuals, But the damage we're seeing is almost society-wide. And I'll list off a couple of them and ask you as a lawyer, is there any way to get at this? In both Oregon and Washington, and to some extent around the country, we're seeing maternity wards being shut down for lack of staffing. And you say, well, why are they short of staff? Well, because they've mandated that the staff has to take a vaccine or they're fired. We're seeing shortage of paramedics, of firefighters, of doctors, of nurses. I mean, heck, even WashDOT, the Department of Transportation, it says that they may be short of ferry driver, you know, ferry boat captains and ferry crew, or people to drive and do the jobs that the Department of Transportation does. So we're seeing damage that can go way beyond the individual who's told you have to get vaccinated. They're damaging things, you know, that affect every single person in the state, vaccinated or not. Is there any way to get at that?
Yeah, I do think there's a way to get at that. First, I'd like to see how the injunctive relief plays out, right? If the governor folds, and ultimately we'd have to look backwards for the damages that have already occurred. Those maternity wards, individuals, I've had folks contact me saying, hey, my son, my daughter, my spouse, my parent has not received fair medical treatment because of the COVID issue. So I absolutely think we can look backwards for those types of issues. And obviously, if injunctive relief sought doesn't play out come October 18th, we're going to see a mass claim. And I do foresee some type of claim coming forward. So I do think that's an option.
How about a class action suit on behalf of all aggrieved parties? You'd have about 7 million clients, I think. That's Pete Serrano, who's the founder and general counsel. That means he's the lawyer of a new nonprofit called the Silent Majority Foundation. In a moment, should your kids' American school cave into the communist Chinese government? We'll get to that in your phone calls up next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to get your calls. And the Radio Northwest Network attempts to serve the Pacific Northwest with honestly provocative talk radio. Our question today that we put up on Twitter, not yet on Gitter, but it is on our website as well, has to do with people who are out looking for jobs. Because if you haven't noticed, about a week ago, the extended unemployment benefits went away, and already employers are starting to report that they're seeing gigantic increases in the number of people applying for jobs. And an awful lot of them have not worked in the last 18 months, which means that they were sitting back until the money ran out, till the checks stopped coming. And then they would decide, now I'm going to go look for a job because nobody is sending me a check anymore. Should employers fear hiring workers who took an 18-month break from work? I would answer yes. There are a lot of concrete reasons to do that. Number one, the question might be, well, if there were jobs available, and back in January, there were 7 million jobs available across the United States, tens of thousands of jobs available in both Oregon and Washington and Idaho. If you didn't work over that period of time, why didn't you have a job until you began looking for one after the check ran out? Anyway, today's Twitter poll, at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, at the top of the hour, I talked to the attorney who founded that brand new group, a nonprofit group in Washington State, the Silent Majority Foundation. He made reference to the VAERS data. And I got a few emails from people saying, what is this VAERS data? I said, it's VAERS, and it stands for Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. What it's supposed to do is give everybody in medicine an ability to let the system know when there are problems. And the total number of deaths that are associated with, but not necessarily caused by. And I want to report on this honestly. If you say, if we gave a vaccine to somebody and then they died a short time later, it might have been because of the vaccine. It might have been because of other reasons, but you should know what those numbers are. And nobody claims that the VAERS data is comprehensive because doctors can report to it. They're supposed to report to it. They may not always do that. But the system has identified at least 6,000 deaths that came involving people who had recently had the vaccine and then died. And that is in ages 0 through 39 years of age. And you wouldn't expect that somebody who's young and healthy would get the vaccine and then die shortly afterward. Now, does it mean that all 6,000 of those died because of the vaccine? No, that's not necessarily definitive. But what the lawyer was talking about, Mr. Serrano, was the idea that when you take a vaccine, you should have informed consent or give informed consent. Can you truly be giving informed consent if you're told you have to take this, no questions asked, you just have to take it or you lose your job? Are you really giving informed consent if you don't know about some of the bad side effects of the vaccine? And if you make the sensible decision of saying, well, then I don't want to take it right now, I don't think I need it right now, and then you find out, but you're going to lose your job, that one makes no sense at all. To your calls now at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. In Tacoma, listening on KVI and the Radio Northwest Network. James, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just kind of wanted to share a little bit of my story necessarily dealing with unemployment. So all of 2019, I had worked for a specific job, and then come April of 2020, I lost it due to COVID.
Sorry to hear that.
And so I ended up jumping onto the unemployment benefits. I got all my back pay and all of that, and I worked on it. And then come July, that is when I believe it was President Trump had come out saying that he was going to cut people off of unemployment benefits. And so being scared that I was going to lose that, I was going to lose my place because of it, I instantly jumped on to going out and applying for a job. I worked a job for a week that didn't work out, so I jumped into another job. And I've been working it through the entirety of the pandemic. And
good for you.
To hear President Biden talk about how unemployment has no proof that it is the reason why people aren't getting jobs actually kind of really infuriates me, because I would say that I'm living proof that he's completely wrong.
That if you hadn't feared losing your unemployment, you likely wouldn't have looked to get a job, right?
Exactly. I would have been content on being on unemployment because it actually paid my bills. But because I got that notification saying your benefits will be cut off, I instantly went out and I jumped on a job. I may only be working as a laborer, but, you know, as a laborer working through LaborWorks, I get more money than I would in most jobs anyways. And it's because I was told my benefits were going to be cut off.
And should we have to really put a boot in people's butt that way to say, I mean, because this appears, I've been saying for months that people on unemployment should be seeking work. And way back in May, Biden finally said, we changed the rules temporarily during the height of the pandemic and said, you don't actually have to necessarily get a job or be looking that hard. We're going to keep you on unemployment because we understand that COVID and the actions of government put us in a strange spot where jobs had simply gone away for a time. But Biden announced in May, if you're looking for a job and you're offered a job and you turn it down, you're going to get cut off. Except the state bureaucracies in Olympia and in Salem didn't work very hard to keep, you know, to kick people off who weren't accepting the jobs that were being offered to them. And I think they should have been. James, that's not being hard-hearted. It's saying unemployment
exactly.
is supposed to tide you over until you find another job. And if you just keep telling employers, I'm not going to take the job you're offering me because I'd rather sit at home and collect a check, you shouldn't get the check, should you?
No, and to be honest, I think it's just encouraging laziness. And, you know, I mean, not to get all tinfoil hatty, but I mean, it just almost seems like they want us to be a little more dependent on money that they give us. And
you
that's
think?
What we have been.
You think?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, that's pretty much what it's pointed to.
See, and James, for a lot of us, I mean, I'm an employer. I pay unemployment on behalf of my employees. And if somebody loses a job, I want them to have a way to tide themselves over until they find another job. But if somebody were to say to me, yeah, I'm just going to stretch this unemployment out till it runs out and then I'll look for a job, as far as I'm concerned, that person's being a deadbeat. And if people find that hard-hearted to say it, you say, look, it's supposed to be there to help you through a tough spot between jobs. It's not supposed to say take an 18-month vacation and avoid work as hard as you can.
Yeah, and I have a great feeling, too, that they actually didn't want us to get off anyways. And the reason why I say that is when I was on unemployment, I actually qualified for the PUA claim because the year before I didn't qualify for the full, I think it was 680 hours.
Yeah.
And so I only qualified for the PUA claim. But once I finally had gotten off and got a job after being told I was going to lose it, I ended up apparently getting a letter from unemployment saying, oh, now we go ahead and allow for the previous quarter to go ahead and apply towards it. So you—
Unbelievable. James, thanks for the call. You got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. We've been talking a bit about unemployment, unemployment benefits for tens of thousands of people in the Pacific Northwest ran out just over a week ago. And amazingly, all these employers are now seeing lots and lots of people applying for work with resumes that have a big, fat, blank spot in the middle of it. So I'm asking you on our Twitter poll today, do employers have a reason to distrust or fear hiring workers who took an 18-month break from work? My answer to that would be yes. You can answer any way you like at Lars Larson Show or at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. I want to mention one story to you that actually originally on the East Coast of the United States. But it's an absolutely terrifying situation, I imagine, for any parent to know that a child, even an adult child, is missing. Now, this young lady was headed for the Pacific Northwest. In fact, she wasn't too far away when she was last seen. But consider this. This is a 22-year-old woman who took off from the East Coast with her boyfriend, and they were living out of their van. And they were doing podcasts and things like that, van life. Okay, fine. And she was sending all these happy videos out, both to the general public on Facebook as well as to her family. The last time her family talked to her was just before the end of August. And then she was last seen along with her boyfriend checking out of a hotel in Salt Lake City, Utah. She said her schedule originally was that she was expected to visit family friends here in the Pacific Northwest toward the end of next month. And then she just flat disappears and nobody knows where she is. And her boyfriend, rather than cooperating with the authorities, has now hired a lawyer. Her name is Gabby Petito, and she was seen in Wyoming's Grand Teton National Park. She was on this tour with her boyfriend, Brian Landry. They say the vehicle that the couple was traveling in, a 2012 Ford Transit van with Florida plates, has been recovered. But Landry, the boyfriend, has gone back to Florida. He's hired an attorney and he's refused to cooperate with the authorities, which kind of leads me to believe that maybe he's involved in her disappearance. You'd think your girlfriend disappears in the middle of a long, long, months-long road trip and you're not willing to cooperate with the cops. I know exactly who the cops are going to look at. The fact that she was headed for the Pacific Northwest toward the tail end of their trip in late October makes me curious about what exactly was going on there. The second thing I want to mention to you, because I've told you that I'm concerned about the United States and even institutions like our schools being bullied by communist China. So let me give you a specific example. This one comes from Colorado. A high school wanted to send a student to cover the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women. So the high school student is doing a project. But China told this public high school, it's a private high school, it's Regis Jesuit High School, said you as a school have to change your point of view on Taiwan and call it a province of China. Otherwise, we will not let that student attend or cover the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women. Now, this is the camel's nose under the tent. In other words, we've got a lot of people who want to use schools for politics. We've got people who want to put up Black Lives Matter flags in schools and do it officially. They want to put up gay rights flags in schools and do it officially. the Newburgh school system got into a fight. In fact, their board of directors said, we don't want any politics in the classroom, which is my point of view as well. Even if I agree with the political message they're sending, say pro-life or pro-Second Amendment, I don't want the politics in the classroom. I want the kids to go to school to learn how to think, and I don't want them to be pushed around. And then when you see actors like China that are trying to dictate to the public schools, and in universities, they have this thing called the Confucius Institute that's been set up at a bunch of public universities. So taxpayers are funding a public university. Communist China puts a Confucius Institute on campus and begin to push political points of view on us. We also know that some of the things that you see on social media are now being influenced by Chinese bots that spread messages around designed to create havoc in the United States. We've got to make sure that we understand that Communist China is a threat to the United States. It is a military threat. It's an economic threat. And at this point, it may even be an educational threat to some of you. Now to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Let me start with Jessica, who's listening in Cottage Grove on the Radio Northwest Network. Jessica, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. Just to speak to your question about, is it okay for employers to maybe question their applicants for after being unemployed for a period of time? And I think it absolutely makes a difference if an applicant has been sitting at home for the last 18 months on unemployment or has had, you know, a strong work history previously. And I also don't think, and, you know, speaking for all the employers out there, that it is absolutely not discriminatory to look at that. It's a judge of character, your work ethic. I agree. I support unemployment when it's used appropriately. When I had been in between jobs, you know, years ago, a mother of two, married, we were a young family, and between jobs, it was the most humbling experience to go down and fill out for, you know, apply for food stamps, to go down to get a box of food to support my family. But you're darn right, every day I took my two young kids and I went to that employment office and I sat there on their computer because I didn't have one of my own. And I applied for those food stamps and had a friend working for the employment department and came and sat next to me, put her arm around me as I was in tears over that application. And she said, you know what, it's okay because you've paid into this program, into the system. That is why it is here. So, and throughout the pandemic, my husband and I were fortunate enough to be considered as quote unquote essential employees. We right. have both continued working and supporting our family. I'm very heavily involved in my community and, you know, go above and beyond to tip generously when we go out into local restaurants and small businesses.
So do we.
And I often have, you know, a habit of thanking employees. You know, when you go to the register, I was at the most memorable experience was recently at a wonderful restaurant in Roseburg. And this young woman was our waitress. You could tell that she was new. And we finished our awesome meal. We went up and we went to go pay. And I said, hey, and thank you so much for being here. Thanks for working. And she said, well, of course. She goes, that's how my daddy raised me. She goes, there isn't another option. And I said, at a girl, I said, I like you. And I turned to my 13-year-old and I looked at her with the biggest smile, you know, and even tears in my eyes and said, that right there, that's a good, hardworking girl. And that's the way it's
going to That's going to stick with your daughter, isn't it?
I sure as hell hope so.
Well, I do too.
I have one that's just woke and then one that's not. So,
you know, well, that happens too. And I've been through that too. But Jessica, years ago, I made a proposal far outside of the pandemic and all this stuff. And I said, why don't we do this? Instead of just paying the same amount of benefits, you know, if the typical amount is 6 months is the maximum, right? I said, right. Why don't we have benefits that come closer to your working paycheck for the first month or the first 45 days or the first 2 months? And then after that, they start to drop really fast because the idea is go out and find another job to replace the one you lost. You know, if you weren't fired for cause, you're getting unemployment benefits. Instead of paying the same amount all the way through, why don't you have it so that people say, well, I know my first two months of unemployment is going to be really healthy. But after that, it starts to drop fast. So I better start looking for a job now. We've designed a system that seems designed to encourage people to stay on until the last minute. And now we have this extended stuff and the additional benefits and all that. It all seems designed to make people dependent on the government. And I think we can all see the dangers of that these days. If you never saw it before, you can certainly see it now. Coming up, I want to update you on Elio, if you've heard me talk about them before. And it's going to be an interesting update, and I'll get to more of your phone calls and emails. It's the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I feel somewhat obligated to explain this to you. I mean, not an explanation, but just to tell you what I know at this point, because I'm kind of in the dark. Close to 10 years ago, Tina and I, my wife and I, saw this little car that a company was talking about building in the United States. And at the time, gasoline prices were crazy. And they're going back to crazy now because of Joe Biden, as he shuts down American oil drilling and American oil exploration and leasing of federal lands and all that. Gasoline prices are pretty nasty right now, and there's no sign that they're going to get better anytime soon. So we saw this little car, and it's the weirdest looking little car. It's called an Elio. And I said, that looks kind of cool. And so Tina and I looked at it. It's not what we usually drive. We drive SUVs, but this thing had an 85 mile per gallon promise. And so we were looking at it, and we talked to the people behind it, and we said, hey, I don't have any money invested in the company, so I got no dog in the fight there. But they said, if you get on this list and you give us a few bucks, we'll put you on the list. You can buy one of these when we start making them in a couple of years. Now, that was close to a decade ago. And since then, I get a lot of emails from people saying, hey, what about that car you were talking about? I said, you know, we've checked in. We've actually had Paul Elio, the guy who's a former Detroit executive and engineer who worked for some of the big three American automobile companies. And we kept waiting for it to come back. Well, when gasoline prices dropped dramatically under President Trump, I thought, well, high gas prices are the good news for a company that makes a high mileage vehicle. And they had had trouble getting together the, I think it was roughly $400 million they needed to start out to do a full-fledged production. But I was excited about it. There was a former Hummer assembly plant in Shreveport, Louisiana, and they leased a quarter of the space. This thing was, I don't know, millions of square feet. And I thought, this is exciting. A car made in America, one of the first American automobile companies since the DeLorean, and that didn't go very well. I thought, this is kind of cool. Maybe we could be on the front end of this, not as investors, but just as enthusiasts, if you will. I have lots of enthusiasms, like for the global supertanker, which also died. I don't know, maybe when I touch something, it dies. But in any case, I just saw the latest update. What are they going to do? They're trying to turn it into an electric car. And they actually sent out a press release. Jalopnik is a great site for people who are interested in cars, like me. And they put out a press release last Thursday saying, we're going to make an electric version of our popular Elio car, except they don't have a car yet. They're not manufacturing the cars. They've never got to the point of actually manufacturing them. Now, I've driven the prototype car. They had a few of those. But a company that's never actually made a car says it's going to make an electric version of the car it doesn't make yet. And I have a feeling what they're trying to do is get in on some of the federal subsidy money because, you know, Joe Biden, as he kills the oil industry, is trying to actually figure out a way to shovel more federal cash in the direction of companies like this, which I think is a terrible idea. You want to own a battery-powered car? Go ahead. I have no objection to you buying one. Buying it with my federal tax money and the federal tax money of everybody else in America, I think is an exceptionally bad idea. Now, let's go to your calls. But that's the update. All they've said is, well, we're going to make an electric version of it, of the car they don't make yet, as pointed out by Jalopnik. Sean's on the line. Sean, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
So much to say, so little time. But first, I'll start with, it seems like we're playing a game of chicken between us and the government. And I've been preparing for this for about a year now. And my company's over 100 employees nationwide. So I feel like within the week or whenever the OSHA rules come down that I'm going to be told that I have to get the vaccine or the gene therapy or do the testing, which neither one I'm going to do. So I'll be having to take some time off. And there's many more like me. So I just feel like it's going to come where the supply chain is going to break And it's almost like they really want it to happen because they've been raiding the Treasury for all this money for unemployment and everything. And the dollar is so weak that it's like there's more going on to just this vaccine mandate. I think it's all tied together. But anyways, you know, if the vaccine mandate does come down on majority of all of us in these corporations, a lot of people are probably going to be taking some time off, and then they'll get their wish of sinking an economy even more. So,
Sean, I'm not a big believer in conspiracy theories until there's evidence that is not a theory that it's actually happening. Do I believe that the Joe Biden government, or the Harris Biden government, if you will, because I don't know whether Joe's actually making the decisions or not. Maybe it's Barack Obama doing it from behind the scenes. But I think they want to collapse the economy. I think they want to make as many people as they can dependent on the government, because once you're dependent on the government, you'll vote for whoever is going to continue shoveling out the benefits. Whereas people like Donald Trump and real conservatives say, you know, we want you to go out and make your own living. We want you to start your own business. We want you to be as independent from the government as you possibly can be. The Democrats believe everybody is better off if they get everything from the government. And we're seeing that left and right. Your kids get their education from the government through the government schools. They get their political indoctrination from the government schools. They can obtain their abortion and their birth control pills from the government schools. They eat their breakfast, lunch, and dinner at the government schools. You borrow your money for college through the government. I mean, all of these things that make you more dependent on a government do not make you a freedom-loving American. You become a government-loving American. This hour of the show brought to you by Nick Shivers. Go to nickshivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home. nickshivers.com for details. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and it's an effort on my part to provide honestly provocative talk to the Pacific Northwest, the states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. And before I bring on Mark Harmsworth, who's director of the Small Business Center at the Washington Policy Center, I saw a headline pop up literally just 1 minute ago, and that is Dr. Anthony Fauci, arguably the least trusted doctor in America at this point, because we've had too many opportunities to find out about his ties to the lab in communist China. We've seen his lies about masks and that sort of thing. And now what is Dr. Fauci trying to sell? He is saying that he would be open to the idea that you, as an American citizen, could not get on an airplane without being vaccinated. That the great unvaccinated of America, maybe 25 or 30% of the country, would simply be denied, it looks like now, not only a job, but you wouldn't be able to get on an airplane either. And I don't think Americans are going to stand for this long. So let me bring on Mark, who, as I said, is the director of the Small Business Center at the Washington Policy Center. King County, Washington, wants to require people to carry vaccination passports. Mark, welcome back. And what in the world are they thinking?
Well, thanks for having me on today, Lars. King County last week just put out a mandate that, using the threat of fines and potentially removing business licenses, or in case of restaurants and bars, liquor licenses, that these businesses now effectively have to enforce a mandate issued to them by the government by requiring their customers to prove that they're being vaccinated before they can be served. And this, like the Dr. Fauci thing that you've just mentioned there, it's the government knowing that it can't directly mandate something on you, is using a business to do it surreptitiously. And we've seen this not just with this King County announcement. We've seen this now with a letter from the Seattle School District that's requiring them, of their subcontractors, so not even members of the state, subcontractors of the Seattle School District, now have to be vaccinated. And in their case, there's no exceptions, not even for medical or for religious or for personal reasons. You have to be vaccinated. And because the state can't require us as individuals to go and inject something into our bodies, whether you want to be ejected or not, this is the way they're doing it. They're doing it through by penalizing our small businesses. And you're seeing this rise up across the world. UK has just withdrawn vaccine passports, but apparently Washington and King County are just barreling ahead.
See, and Mark, I know there are people out there saying, well, what's the big deal? Why don't you all just get vaccinated? And the answer is, number one, you've got an experimental vaccine that is still experimental. Number two, it has some side effects, and some of them are pretty bad. But you don't have any great data on that. And if you want to get data on it, you have to trust the same government that's telling you you have no choice but to get a vaccination, that's saying, by the way, don't worry about it. And all the numbers that might tell you whether there is a legitimate concern, like VAERS, the vaccine, accidental exposure, not accidental exposure, the adverse effect, VAERS, V-A-E-R-S, that's another government number. And so you have all these indications, and people are saying, look, based on my circumstances, I don't want to get it. And the government basically is saying, we will make your life hell if you don't go along and follow our order, even though we don't have the legal authority to do this. I keep thinking this thing is going to go to court, and in the end, they're going to lose, but they think they're going to win long enough to be able to force everybody to do what they're told to do. And by the time there's a win in court, the game will be over.
Yeah, and taking a vaccine is a personal choice, whether you take it or not. That's something between you and your doctor, and that's a personal choice. But the state should not be forcing our businesses to put out, as you've said, put out a mandate for this when you may not want it. And then you're faced with this horrible choice. I can't travel, in the case of the Dr. Fauci mandate that he's discussing today. I can lose my job, and we're starting to see that now. I mean, there's now job sites popping up that allow employers to put jobs on there that don't require vaccines or don't require politics, is the way they're putting it, because a lot of people just want to go to work and do their job, Democrat and Republicans, and not talk politics or be forced to do something they're not supposed to do, or they don't want to do, excuse me. So I just think it's unethical for the state, or in this case, King County, to force a business under the duress of fines to operate in a way. And I think you're right. When this gets to court, I think these things will be overturned eventually, hopefully by the Supreme Court here in Washington. But it's not right. The state doesn't have the authority to do it individually, so it's doing it through businesses.
Well, and I've also been citing this comment by Vice President Harris, who a lot of us fear will become president one of these days too soon, because even though Joe is bad, his replacement is worse. But she literally tweeted out these words today: by vaccinating the unvaccinated, increasing our testing and masking, and protecting the vaccinated, we can end this pandemic. And, you know, I'm not the only one who's pointed out there's a little bit of a contradiction in there. You say, so you want everybody vaccinated, and then we have to protect the vaccinated. If the vaccine actually protects you, why do we need to protect the vaccinated? And the answer is because far too many people, it isn't a majority, but far too many people are ending up with COVID, getting sick, and dying after getting the vaccine. And so either the vaccine has caused it or the illness has caused it. The vaccine is, at best, Mark, I've been describing it lately, the last couple of weeks, as a symptom suppressor. It doesn't truly immunize you against anything. It just says, well, you may still get it, but you could still give it to people, even though you've been vaccinated, and you can get it, you can give it, you can give it to somebody else who's been vaccinated, but it'll suppress the symptoms. Well, that's a whole lot less reassuring, even than the thing this was originally sold as, which is, here's the vaccine, we got the problem solved. And yet there are people like Kamala Harris who are still saying it's solving the problem. By doing what? By suppressing the symptoms some?
Yeah, and if you think in a horrible future prediction that this thing's never going to go away, we can't do this forever. You can't use businesses to penalize a section of society for a behavior or a non-behavior. You just can't do this. I mean, imagine this was a different type of disease that we had a vaccine for, and we've never done this in the past. We've required some vaccines that have been tested for years, but not any that are right out of the gate. And, you know, we've only seen this, obviously, as a vaccine for the last 18 months, 2 years, as it was being developed. I know there was work done before that, but, you know, we haven't seen all this. So there's a lot of legitimate reasons why an individual may not want to do this, but then forcing a business to make you take it under threat of losing your job, but that's where, you know, the state is doing that because it doesn't have the authority to do it to us individually.
Well, And now you got Dr. Fauci a couple of weeks ago saying you may have to have a booster every 5 months. Well, does that mean your vaccine card only stays good if you take all the vaccines they require plus all the boosters they require? And if you're missing one of them, don't think about going out to eat. Don't think about working at a job. Don't get on an airplane. No, you're not going to be allowed to do any of that. I'll get to your phone calls and your emails. We'll talk about President Joe Biden's visit to Idaho up next. Can you imagine what it would be like if the mainstream media, which never got tired of fact-checking Donald Trump when he was president, they even fact-check him now. They call him a liar on a regular basis. Can you imagine if they applied that same kind of fact-checking to Joe Biden? Joe Biden is in Idaho about now. He stopped by for a wildfire-focused event in Idaho at the Regional Fire Center, which is run by the Forest Service. And he told the crowd there that his very first job offer came from a Northwest company called Boise Cascade. But the company says, we have no record whatsoever that Joe Biden ever applied for a job or was offered a job at Boise Cascade, its big wood products company. Biden, as the New York Post is reporting, famous for his recollection of things that never happened, did not specify a year or a job position, but says that he often mentioned it to Idaho's Senator Frank Church back in the 70s. I used to tell Frank Church this. I got my first job offer where I wanted. My deceased wife and I wanted to move to Idaho. Not a joke. It's such a beautiful, beautiful state. And I interviewed for a job at Boise Cascade. In the meantime, there was a war going on. Anyway, the whole point was I used to always kid Frank about it. Boise Cascade spokeswoman Elisa Schampel told the New York Post, we have no record of President Biden's application or of him ever having worked for the company or interviewed with the company. She said, we checked our system internally. Nothing has turned up. So Joe's just out telling stories again. Let's go to your calls now. Cheryl's on the line. Hey, Cheryl, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
I just had a comment about the unemployment that employers need to ask, you know, why they were not working part of their work.
Yeah, they don't need to. I think it's a good idea.
A good idea too.
Yeah. But they're not required to do it. But my question was, should employers fear hiring workers who took an 18-month break from work during the pandemic?
Yeah, I do. My history is I worked for Department of Human Services for 40 years in the self-sufficiency part. And so we were kind of connected with the unemployment people. When people would run out of unemployment, they would come on to TANF or food stamps or, you know, the other services. And the years I'm retired now, but the last 10 years, they were not working together. In other words, because they weren't checking if people were applying for unemployment, and that just kind of went away when they came on to our program, which had a work element too, that they were supposed to be looking for work. Then they wouldn't look for work when they were on self-sufficiency programs. And so,
that's a good point. Cheryl, I hate to ask this, but during your time there, did your department have a batting average for how often you were able to get people off welfare and off food stamps and off unemployment and back into actually contributing?
I worked for a county that had a really good jobs program. So I was thankful for that, and I saw some success with people getting off of assistance and becoming self-sufficient. But I know other counties, the larger counties, struggled with that, and when they would transfer into our branch, they would say, well, we didn't have to do anything in such and such a district. You know, they were so different from one county to the next, and that was contracted out in some counties. Ours was contracted out to a county agency that helped with our jobs program. And it was small enough.
You know, Cheryl, for a lot of us taxpayers, one of the most frustrating things is that out here in the real world, outside of government, there are always metrics. You know, if you go to work in a sales job, they say, well, the guy you're replacing or the gal you're replacing sold, $300,000 worth of product every year. We expect you to do about the same. And if at the end of a year you're selling $100,000 worth of the company's product or service, they're going to say, you got to bring your numbers up or you're out of here. And they do that. And I just wonder why government doesn't do that and say, Cheryl, you're in the self-sufficiency department. We want to set a goal that you'll get at least half the people off welfare by the end of, let's say, 12 months. And you shoot for that, maybe you only get to 40%, but at least you get some of them. They don't even track that kind of stuff?
Well, they used to, okay, because I worked there for 40 years. So in the 70s and then the 80s, and then I saw it become more, less and less goal-oriented, and we never, you know, we just let people just kind of hang out. I mean, they weren't held accountable for anything, and we even paid them to come in to their jobs appointment. We couldn't get enough people to come in, even though we explained that to them when they applied. We would actually offer them like $50 if you come in for your first appointment. So we started paying people. Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. It was, like I said, the last 10 years of my service, I wanted to still help people, but the government didn't, the rules didn't support what I wanted to do for the people I helped, I worked with.
That is sad. Cheryl, thank you very much. Let me grab this naysayer. Cheryl, that was a great call, but that tells you a lot about government and how it differs from the real world. Will, you're a naysayer. What do you and I disagree about today?
The vaccines. I just want to remind the audience that everybody here has probably gotten vaccines. You've given your kids vaccines. This vaccine is safe, and you should probably...
Not most kids, because you can't vaccinate kids under the age of 12. I think it's 12 at this point. So
when you have toddlers and stuff, you have to get vaccines by a certain amount, and...
You don't have to.
You know, tetanus.
You don't have to. It's your choice as a parent, isn't it? So you're already stating some untruths, but go ahead. What else do we disagree about that you're going to state accurately for me?
Oh, okay. So government schools already require vaccines for tetanus and all sorts of other things.
Or an exemption. Or an exemption.
And religious, what is the exemption?
Religious, medical, and philosophical. The medical would be... Your family doctor says this kid shouldn't get these vaccines, and you don't. Or you say our religion doesn't buy that, and you don't. Or philosophical, and many companies, and both private and public, have said if you philosophically don't want to do this, you don't have to.
Okay, but you're equating, you're bringing everybody to this philosophical level for vaccines when it's a public health issue. Like, you can if you want, but the majority of the public should get vaccines. Vaccines are good.
By force? How far are you willing to go, Will?
What do you mean by force?
By force, meaning if you don't, you can't work, you can't travel. Well, but you should
be in apparently you just have to be in an employed under 100. So you can do that. Maybe don't fly. Maybe you can drive a car.
How about going out to eat? How about going to a grocery store? I mean, how about all the things the Biden administration said we will have no mandate. Multiple members, including Joe, his head of CDC, Rochelle Walensky, all said we're not going to have a mandate. And now all of a sudden it's mandate for job. Are you in favor of the government forcing people to do it?
In certain situations, yeah, of course. Why wouldn't I?
Because you should believe it's an individual choice?
I mean,
is that a strange idea?
I mean, you have to drop your conviction on religious freedom. It doesn't really matter.
No, you know what? I'm not going to drop my First Amendment, Second Amendment, any of the Bill of Rights. I'm not giving up one piece of my Constitution, Will, but thanks for the invitation. Coming up next, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll get to your phone calls and emails shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. Naysayers go to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. I think when it comes to Democrats, I've noticed they set the bar for lawlessness awfully low, or at least they want to. And if you say, well, how low have they set it recently, Lars? Well, consider this. The Democrats would like to see a lot of green cards, millions of green cards added to America's supply. And I think their goal there is that they want to bring in an awful lot of people into the United States and give them the ability to compete with you in the job market. Now, just recently, just the last day or so, the Republicans, in this case, I believe it was Representative, it was Mike Johnson. Mike Johnson said, I'll tell you what, why don't we say this? Let's agree in an amendment to that bill that you won't allow any aliens in who have 10 or more driving under the influence citations. And the Democrats voted against that limit because they want to let in illegal aliens who are regularly drinking and driving, I guess, if they're not willing to even have a standard like that. R.J. Holman is the government relations director for the Federation for American Immigration Reform. I've had a longstanding relationship with FAIR. I think it's a great group. It advocates for American immigration reform, the right kind, the legal kind. R.J., welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Lars.
So what is it exactly the Democrats are proposing to do with these 8 million additional green cards?
Well, you took the words out of my mouth, Lars. Just for some brief background for everybody, is, you know, Democrats are trying to use the budget reconciliation process, this arcane legislative process that allows legislation to be passed in the Senate with a simple majority rather than that 60 vote threshold. They say that everything has to be budgetary. You can't do big policy changes like immigration, but they're pretty confident that the Senate parliamentarian will allow them to include an amnesty for about 8 million people. Democrats in the Senate made their case to her on Friday, but shortly after that, and this is what is being considered right now, the House Judiciary Committee released the actual amnesty text. And again, they're going through it. I'll get into a couple radical amendments, but it's part of that $3.5 trillion puzzle. It will likely be passed. Lars, it's the largest amnesty in American history. 8 million or so illegal aliens. And like you said, they will get green cards, but they will eventually be put on a path to citizenship. There'll be more voters. Okay, and they're also, it's going to be a lot of fraud. That number is going to go beyond 8 million. It includes the Dreamer population, they say, which is greatly expanded. It includes every illegal alien that they call an essential worker, which is defined in a way that pretty much includes every industry. And it also allows the Homeland Security Secretary to give every illegal alien, Lars, in the United States an opportunity to apply for this before deporting them. That will essentially stop everyone. And also criminals are eligible. You got gang members, sex offenders, and the DHS secretary can waive that ineligibility of former criminals. And as you said, in the last couple of hours, some Republican lawmakers have put out amendments like this, the one from Mike Johnson you just mentioned. They tried to make sex offenders ineligible, gang members ineligible, to see what Democrats would do. And the Democrats voted down the amendments. You had Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren from California, who's leading this effort on the committee and as radical as it gets. She's essentially saying gang members, sex offenders, will deliver economic benefits for all Americans. It's just outrageous. You got no care for public safety. They just want more voters and more cheap foreign labor.
You know, RJ, the thing that's always troubled me, I mean, there are many things that trouble me about illegal aliens. But, you know, when you say we have the best country on planet Earth to come to, and we have more people from the entire planet that would like to come here. And you say, well, if you've got a popular club, you know, and you say, who should we let in? And the Democrats say, let in anybody, let in criminals, let in people who've committed crimes here in the United States. And you say, hold on, can't we be a little pickier than that? I mean, the country is the most generous when it comes to refugees, when it comes to asylum seekers. I mean, we extend freedom to people who are in terrible circumstances, who might not be able to meet these criteria. But if you say, but who should we let in who gets a green card, the right to work, and a five-year path to being a U.S. citizen, a voter? You can run for any office except president and vice president. You can run for all the other offices if you want to. If you become a citizen, we'll give that to you. Well, why would we include people who've already done bad things, criminal things in our country?
No, that's a great point, Lars. There's no end in sight when it comes to letting people into the country in the Democrats' eyes. Whether it's legally, they want to expand our legal immigration system to basically everyone on planet Earth. They want the border crisis to remain going, for it to remain open, and give everybody here amnesty. But, Lars, you know, President Trump even tried to reform the legal immigration system to make sure people come here who actually want to be Americans and truly benefit this country, a new points-based system of sorts that looks like Europe. Democrats rejected that. And the other thing, Lars, I'm not saying I'd support this or FAIR would support it, but there have been past efforts that Republicans said, okay, you know, we'll legalize a set of people if they pass background checks. in exchange for reforms to our system, as well as addressing border security, interior enforcement. Democrats cannot stomach any of that, period. What they're trying to do here is in exchange for absolutely nothing. Again, nothing to address the border crisis or strengthen our system. If Republicans were to offer some type of amnesty amount, if they were just to call their bluff, Lars, and say, hey, you know what? Screw the budget reconciliation process. We're going to offer a bill that will amnesty these 8 million people in exchange for mandatory E-Verify to make sure illegal aliens can't come here and work, to build the border wall, and maybe make some tweaks to our legal immigration system. They'd say no way. Even if you did one provision from something like that, the Democrats would still say no way. You know why, Lars? They want us to be here again in 10, 20 years to amnesty the next
and
wave
we will.
Of people or have a steady flow. And we
I
will.
Mean, RJ,
yes, we'll be in this situation again.
This may have happened when you were a kid because it was 1986. It was 37 years ago. Reagan, and he called it the biggest mistake he'd ever made, signed the bill that was passed by a Congress that said, let's give amnesty. And they promised it'll be about a million, maybe a million and a half. I think by the time the courts were done with it 25 years later, it was several million people. And it sent the message to the whole world, by the way, the United States is a pushover. Just go there, hang out, and eventually you'll get amnestied. And you're right, if we do it a second time, the first time we did it, it encouraged a flood of new illegal aliens to come in. We do it a second time, the flood will become a tsunami.
No, it's absolutely. And, you know, even if we were to get trade-offs in exchange for an amnesty of sort, you'd be putting the ball in the court of future administrations to actually adhere to current law. That's what happened after the Reagan thing as well. There were things that were passed. The can was kicked down the road after unions, the cheap labor lobby were begging. We're begging things not to be implemented. And as you're right, that thing was happening 25 years later. In the early 2000s, they were still adjudicating cases. The amount of fraud that will be triggered here, Laws, is insane. I mean, the number that we're touting as 8 million is low because, A, we don't know how many people are here illegally officially. And then again, we know this will trigger so much fraud and abuse, and you're going to have Democratic Congress people enabling it.
Well, and RJ, I mean, people have asked me, how many illegals are there? And I said, well, for 20 years when I was a reporter, every year they'd say 11 million. But we got a million more this year. And the next year it'd be 11 million or 12 million. Yeah, that Yale University study is probably the best one out there, says 22 to 30 million illegal aliens here. I think you could expect that this 8 million might easily turn into 20 million. And of course, the Democrats view every single one of them as a potential voter who will look at the Democrats and say, these are the people that got me in. These are the people that made me a citizen and a legal worker. I'm going to be loyal to them for the rest of my life. And they will have a whole category, a population of people who will owe their loyalty to one political party for busting the law, for saying you came here illegally, you broke our laws, and as a result, we're not going to punish you. We're going to give you the most precious thing you could get, the permanent status to stay in the United States and become a citizen. It's absolutely outrageous. And the fact that the Democrats don't even want to pass it as a separate bill, that's equally outrageous. Glad to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to take your calls. 866-439-5277. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network. Just a reminder, I'd love to have you vote in our Twitter poll. I have a feeling we might get an interesting result. It was sparked by the fact that today, a lot of employers in the Northwest are saying, now that the money, the free money of unemployment, extended unemployment, additional benefits, et cetera, once all that stuff ran out, an awful lot of employers who are begging for people to apply for jobs all of a sudden had a flood of applicants. So the question is, should employers fear hiring a worker who took an 18-month break from work? In other words, they went through the motions to say, yes, I'm looking for a job. But many of them went out, looked for jobs, were offered jobs, turned them down, and stayed on unemployment, which is not legal and hasn't been for a while. So that's the question. Should employers fear hiring workers who took an 18-month break from work? I would say yes. Today's Twitter poll brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Allison's on the line, listening on the Radio Northwest Network in Beaverton. Hey, Allison, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. I was told to get to the point. I'm going to do my best.
So quick question. So first of all, I'd just like to say, and I'm sure people have said this before, but I'm a Democrat. I am not in favor of illegal immigration. And I just, I listen to you all the time, and I don't want to be lumped into someone who thinks that it's okay for someone who's been accused of drunk driving 10 times to still, you know, be allowed to be one of the, you know, lucky recipients of a green card. That's not, just not the case. And my second point is a question. And sure. What's the difference between someone being able to choose whether to be vaccinated or not for themselves and their child versus being able to choose to have an abortion, in your mind?
Well, because if I choose not to take a vaccine, that's my choice alone. I am one person. A pregnant woman is two people. Now, officially in the state of Oregon, she's only one, but say California or Washington, that's two people there. Have you ever congratulated a woman who's a friend of yours who's pregnant by saying, how's the baby doing, when she was, say, 3 or 4 months along?
Yes, of course.
And is that a baby? Is that a baby at that point?
In my opinion, yes, absolutely, from the time of conception, but my fear is making that choice for someone else. I don't know their circumstances.
But see, you're a rare Democrat because you sound like you're mostly pro-life, so I'll give you that much. But when you're not
pro-life,
you're making the choice for somebody else in the same way that if one of your neighbors was beating one of his children and you feared the child might either be seriously hurt or die, you're not making a choice for them. Society has said you can't kill people unless you do it for a legal reason, self-defense. So if somebody is beating a child, you can't say, well, that's my child. I can do whatever I want with my child. You can't do that. So when you say you're making a choice for somebody else who's pregnant, saying you can't kill that baby, society has already made that choice and said you can't kill people unless you have a really good legal reason for doing it, usually in self-defense. So that's the choice you're making. But haven't we already made the choice to say, unless you're doing it for a self-defense reason, you're not allowed to kill somebody, right? Well, so is that baby a somebody or is the baby a lump of flesh?
That is a somebody in my world.
in my world, too. So you're a rare Democrat. I'm just curious. I'm guessing Suzanne Bonamici is your member of Congress, right?
That's correct.
Have you ever gone to a meeting, one of these town halls they like to have from time? Usually they screen people like you and me out. But would you ever go to one of those meetings and say to Congresswoman, I don't know what her vote on this was, but because she's in the House, not in the Senate, but what would you say to Suzanne Bonamici when she said, yeah, I voted. They wanted to exclude illegals with more than 10 DUIs. What would you say to her?
Oh, I would absolutely say that is not, you're not representing the majority of our town. I don't believe that there's anyone that I know that would agree with us.
See, and that's the thing. Even among your most liberal Democrat friends, I mean, the ones who think Nancy Pelosi is the greatest thing since sliced bread and all that. I mean, would any of them say we should let convicted drunk drivers in, even the ones that keep doing it over and over and over, so they get a chance to kill somebody like John Zupan? Zupan, the supermarket guy who got killed by an illegal alien. We should let those illegal aliens kill people here, right?
No.
I mean, even your most progressive friends would say, what are you talking about? And say, well, I'm talking about what happens in the real world. So.
Yeah. Understood. Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time and taking my call. Thank you so much. And
you know what? You are, well, we love having the other side call in. And I mean, and even though you and I are really on the same side, I wish we try to get Democrats every single day of the week. If I could get a Democrat
is that true? I didn't know.
Yeah,
that.
No, it is. I invite Kate Brownrigg. I invite Jay Inslee. I've invited Wyden and Merkley and Cantwell and Murray, the whole Earl Blumenauer. One of my producers and I were back in D.C. a couple of years ago, and we'd call Blumenauer endlessly. And he and I used to have a book exchange. Once a month, we'd meet for breakfast, and I'd give him a book I was reading and, you know, that I'd read, and he'd give me one. And the guy won't have anything to do with me. And I walked up to him because we happened to encounter him in the hallway of, I think it was the Rayburn House Office Building. I said, Congressman Blumenauer. and he just blew right by me. Like, I don't, you know, and there was nobody else in the hallway but my producer, Congressman Blumenauer, and me. And Blumenauer will not give me, literally won't give me the time of day. I would put Democrats on.